Dr. Rock's Radio Show. Thursday 9 p.m. to midnight on peoplesinternetradio.com. We go to 11.
Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's Radio Show on peoplesinternetradio.com. We kicked off that with the Kinks and Give the People What They Want. Shooting presidents, throwing people to the lions, war, war and more war. Is this really what people want? We followed it up with The Curve and Come Clean. When will you wake up? When will we wake up? And that was followed by All Talk, No Action from Dexter Dextrous and his Fingersmiths, one of the Doctor's very favourites. Well, I must admit I'm feeling still a little bit phased after 10 days in Glastonbury, which included 7 days of non-stop ceremony from basically sort of 9:30 in the morning through till about 6 o'clock in the evening. We were once again engaged in one of our favourite projects, the template ceremonies, which, even after 20 years of work on our part, mine and Synchro's, and 30 years of work on Juliet and Jeeva's part, the people who are responsible for initiating the whole project, is still absolutely fascinating. It is extremely unusual in my experience to come across something that, despite having so much attention paid to it, remains absolutely gripping. As the effects of the ceremonies have unfolded in us, an unfoldment which has actually been witnessed one way or the other by people who listen to this radio station, the model itself has also been unfolding. It was our second chance, effectively, to experience ceremonies 7 to 10, which we first went for last year at about the same time, as winter started. And as is usually the case, the first experience of these things, whilst memorable, it's very, very difficult to put one's finger on just exactly what it was that happened. It seems, though, that having experienced them once, the second time through, it's much more possible for one's intellect and inner self to get a grip on what's going on and to have a bit more memory of it. I've already talked in some detail about phase one of this system, ceremonies 1 to 5, which basically reconnect electromagnetic circuits into the human energy system. A reconnection which is demonstrated every time through the use of muscle testing. We show that it is possible to reconnect these circuits with the help of outside tools, as it were, geometry mostly, though not exclusively. But that after the ceremony is complete, the strength of the muscle test is absolutely undeniable. This continues to be the case. The earlier shows that I did are available on the Doctor's podcast page, show number, I think it was 154, which is called Template Ceremonies, A Conversation with Juliet Carter, which turns out to be one of the most popular downloads we have ever done by a very, very long shot. Both Juliet and I did hope to get another interview together this time whilst we were in Glastonbury, but in fact, neither of us were really up to it after the 7 days. I must admit that I am, as I say, still pretty much blown away by the experience, so I'm not quite sure how this evening's going to go. Hopefully I'll be able to keep my focus on it. I certainly wouldn't, honestly, be able to keep my focus on anything else. I've been told by the posse, who are really amongst the first people I've encountered since I got back home, that I am standing taller, with bright and shiny eyes. I apparently absolutely look different. The other show I did was a bit before the chat with Juliet, and it was called A Ceremonial Solution. I think it was show number 151. There's, I think, all the detail we need about that initial stage in there for anybody who wants to go and listen to it. I intend, though, this evening to begin an exploration of the second phase of the ceremonies. Folk who've listened to the earlier shows will be aware that I was so thrilled and impressed by Ceremony 1 that really I had a bit of difficulty with 2, 3 and 4, and it was quite difficult to get back on board. But come Ceremony 5 and Ceremony 6, which is the one I'm particularly interested in this evening, it really started to manifest itself again. And since then, the experience has just become deeper and deeper, and I remain convinced in myself that we're dealing with something here that is worth paying attention to. I guess we have all of us on PIR one way or the other witnessed over the years people trying really to attract groups together, people who are willing to work together to move forward with some of the discoveries that have been made. I know that Rob Freeman's made several such attempts, and Darren Diogi with his People's Public Trust. All of it seems to have drifted by. It does seem to be very difficult to get people together to talk about the kind of material that really needs to be talked about if we're going to set about finding for ourselves a better world than the one we're evidently living in at the moment. The template, it seems to me, does both things. It is a ceremonial solution, the intent of which is to affect basically the entire world, the whole population. We call it global ascension because that is what we are aiming for. And, you know, for Ceremony 11, which was done for the first time in the UK this weekend, we had, my guess is, somewhere like 160 people there. And they were absolutely rapt, I think, as was I, by the experience. They came from Costa Rica and Belgium and France and Germany and Holland and Ibiza. There were people from all over the world, many, many new faces, and I suspect that some of them will be listening to the show tonight. Don't know whether any of you have found your way into the chat box. It's worth it if you want to join in. Failing which, anyway, a big welcome to any new listeners to PIR who've come to try and catch this. This is basically the first time that this information has basically even been broadcast. I do intend to broadcast some 50 minutes of Juliet's introduction to Ceremony 6 because it deals with so much of the stuff that we deal with regularly here on People's Internet Radio from the side of the problem, but it is also offering what is really, I think, a mega solution for those people who are ready to change. And even for people who are not ready to change, it is a very, very good way to start, I think. But it is really with some nervousness on my part, and it has to be said on Juliet's, that we begin to broadcast this material to the world. It has always been kept up until now in a workshop situation. This, I think, was basically a very, very good idea because we are ourselves only just discovering what the true nature of this model is. I think we now have some idea of what the whole thing's going to look like. And whilst I was uncertain and not necessarily very keen to engage in more ceremonies than Ceremony 1, I now completely comprehend, understand and apprehend what it is that's going on. I can feel the change inside me. You can possibly, even over the radio, hear the excitement in my voice as I deal with this stuff. As I said, the template ceremonies have been 30 years in the making for Juliet and Jeeva. I think it must be, like I say, approaching 20 years of work for Synchro and I. And there's probably nothing that I've actually spent that long doing in my entire life. There is certainly nothing that has maintained my interest for such a long time. We are endeavouring to remind humanity of its sentient sovereign nature within what is clearly a mutant matrix that currently dominates the world in which we live. And when I first heard Juliet use the phrase mutant matrix, I basically thought that it was perhaps a bit strong, somewhat over the top. But in those days, I was still very much in what I think is a standard mode of thought as I wander around the place. And that mode of thought is that what we're dealing with is basically a huge mistake, a cock-up, an accident in which people are simply not getting it together. You know, it's a complicated world. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. And maybe people were just not finding the time, not finding the enthusiasm, not finding the will to get themselves together and start addressing it. Of course, the best part of 5 years listening to People's Internet Radio and its predecessors, amongst other radio stations, have convinced me that not only is mutant matrix a highly apposite phrase to describe the challenge that we find arising around us, but that sentient sovereignty are also words that are extremely appropriate when considering how we rise to this challenge. Of course, we need look no further than many of the shows on People's Internet Radio to discover the nature and extent of the Matrix. Lee's Dark Side of the Room, which if I remember rightly goes out at it Fridays between 11 p.m. and 1, is a show that he doesn't call it the dark side of the room for nothing. But one of the things that we acknowledge in the template, which is not generally acknowledged by should we call it the New Age scheme of thought, is that it is necessary to look to a certain extent at the shadow. And that is one thing that the template definitely does. We examine as much of it as we possibly can. Lee's Dark Side of the Room, in my opinion, enables us to grok fully the nature of this matrix and how quickly it's now extending itself into all aspects of our lives. Things have changed so much since I was a youngster, and now it's changing by the day. We can really see that we are having the piss taken out of us extensively on a daily basis. My own private reading, having listened to stories of the Scottish land clearances and the Irish famine and all the rest of it, have revealed to me a pattern of servitude and slaughter which is absolutely inexcusable, and it is amazing and difficult to explain why it is that this has remained the case when the world is basically full of decent people. I mean, all of the shows on People's Internet Radio investigate this aspect of the world to a fairly great extent. And we do that whilst investigating solutions that enable us, with some difficulty, it has to be said, to resist as individuals this extension through recognition of it and through exercise of our own sovereign will. One of my favourite shows, of course, is Scotland is Free with Pat Veldon on Mondays between 9 and midnight. And Pat concentrates very successfully on the soulless nature of the corporate entities that are visiting madness and murder and mayhem on the peoples of the world. But he also concentrates on the vital recognition that knowledge and understanding of this reminds us that the real power lies with us. This is very much a message of the template as well. We are looking at the shadow in order to more readily embody a solution which cannot possibly be embodied if we are not looking at the problem. Vin's Sunday shows, of course, have always been a favourite. The concentration there on the nature of language, on how important what we say and how we say it is to the way things work out for us, that the use of passive language not only helps us to navigate the world more effectively and more peacefully with other people, it is absolutely crucial in helping us to survive here without having absolutely everything we believe we own taken off us. His shows, I think, especially those with Billy Maguire, also speak of how the Irish Constitution, very much like the American Constitution before it, was a serious attempt to redress this imbalance at the level of the state, multiples of people trying to work together for a more peaceful and equitable world. Both of these attempts, though, to establish some kind of fit state as opposed to the no-fit states we see all around us, were suborned by the Crown and by corporations. But it is most definitely my belief that the two constitutions themselves were and are indicative that that the time is right, after untold thousands of years, to shake off the chains of servitude and reclaim our power, our sovereignty, and our world. And whilst we are making significant progress as individuals and as groups of individuals, we still need, I think, to be addressing the problem at a level somewhat different from where we find the problem arising. This is something that has been recognised philosophically many times before and by people who are much better at expressing it, probably, than I am. And these ceremonies are a project that aims to change consciousness globally through shared intent and ceremonial practice and an assumption of compassion and love and care for our world, for all its creatures, for its plants and its minerals, and for the energetic spirit that makes them all what they are. The mutant matrix exerts its power through concentrated intent, ceremony and ritual, the effects of which manifest fundamentally by separating us one from the other and from our world and from the cosmos. And the fundamental ground of this, as has been mentioned before, is the apparent separation of spirit from matter, when in fact we know that all is energy. We understand that our bodies are replaced physically over a period of a very few years, and that on a subatomic level, they're changing all the time. We are, in fact, fountains of energy, having the illusion of a stable world and a stable entity to encounter that world with. As I said, muscle testing is used throughout the template ceremonies to demonstrate that the weakness arising from thousands of years of abuse and servitude and lies is replaced by the strength of reconnection, unity, the recognition of unity, and truth. The material that is going to be under consideration tonight is associated, as I said, specifically with Ceremony 6, which basically begins a phase of activation and integration of the circuits that we reconnected in Ceremonies 1 to 5. And it is, at least in my opinion, no coincidence that that immediately after our first experience of this particular ceremony, Synchro and I stepped pretty dramatically away from many aspects of the control grid. As was said in the introduction to the early ceremonies, many of us have freed ourselves to a greater or lesser extent from the net cast by the world management team. And it is my feeling that that these ceremonies were really responsible for that. We then began the work of exploring and enacting our own sentient sovereignty. It was also at this point, of course, that Dr. Rock's radio show was born. It has taken me some time to realise that the two projects are, in fact, two sides, really, of the same coin, rather than two entirely separate things, and that much of what I hear on People's Internet Radio was really first introduced to me when I went to that first ceremony, which was itself, it has to be said, not a habitual activity. It is not something that I engage in as a matter of course. In fact, I think really The template ceremonies are the only thing like this that I've engaged in. There's probably not many other things like it, although my guess is, and I think Juliet and Jeeva agree, that there are other technologies and there are other things happening out there that are working towards the same point. It is my hope that both People's Internet Radio and the template are going to benefit really from making this material more generally available. And it is now absolutely clear to Synchro and myself that we're going to be hitting the road in the new year and hosting ceremonies in as many different places as we can. We're already clearly going to be doing several in Mid and North Wales. I think we're going to be heading for Manchester. We'll be going back up to Todmorden and doing some more work up there. And like the fathers of the American and the Irish constitutions, we believe that the time is right to shake off the shackles of our past and work towards the bright light of a new conception, because so much of what is going on starts in our minds, and it's going to end in our minds as well. So here, really, for the first time in the public realm, is Juliet speaking at a template workshop. Thanks, Juliet, very much for letting go of this. I realise it's not an easy thing to do, but I think we all recognise that the time has come now to get out there and do the work, take it, as it were, to a new level. It's already apparent that these ceremonies attract large numbers of people. Maybe many of them are more used to ceremony than I am, but one of the things that really strikes me about it is that we are getting hundreds of people sometimes to come and participate in this activity, and in the process, because of our recognition of the need to examine the problem, to examine the shadow within ourselves and in the world. These people, many of them are being exposed to ideas that we regard here on this radio station as normal, run-of-the-mill discussion. They're being exposed to these ideas for the first time, which I think is important. I think it's important that people recognise ceremony. I think it's important, and how important it is, because clearly the dark power holders do. They've been at it for thousands of years. It's also important that people get a chance in a safe environment to become exposed to information about vaccines, about the world management team, about the television, about what is going on around us. And I think the other thing is, it's important that people encounter the muscle testing technique, which is not only useful to us for demonstrating that we're introducing strength where once there was weakness, but it can also be used as a really valuable tool for finding out what might be physically wrong with the body. It's a way of gaining answers, which is little short of miraculous. And as we move towards actualization, which process we actually started this weekend, the actualization of 30 years of work, Juliet is, in this particular workshop, addressing the nature of the world in which we find ourselves, because that's what actualization is. It's bringing the stuff really home to us. And it's weird. It's now several days since we finished this particular part of the process, and I guess the word I'd use to describe it is that I feel high. I feel slightly more separated from the crazy world than I was before, but there is a clarity which previously has not really been noticeable in myself. So she's addressing the nature of this world and how it is that recognition of the energetic and the physical, the recognition of body and soul as a unity is helping us to overcome the abuse and distraction that has characterized human activity for so long. It is raising our vibration. And one of the things that was said many years ago is that as a result of this activity, people will be attracted by the lighter vibration of the folk who are successfully embodying template principles. And that again is something that Synchro and I have personally experienced. So I'm just going to push a few buttons here. My hands are really shaking for some reason tonight, and I'm having a little difficulty controlling the mouse. So excuse me if there's a couple of seconds of dead air whilst I switch over to what I think I've divided it into two chunks, because I'd like to comment a little bit on the first half, and then we'll probably have a bit of music and listen to the rest of it. But so here we go. We'll see if we can't remember to turn the mic off and do everything else. Excuse me if I do sound a bit phased. That is because I am a bit phased. So here comes Juliet, as I say, for the first time released from workshops and into the open world. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I did. It might be a little difficult for me to concentrate on questions in the chat box, but I'll see what I can do. So here we go. Juliet Carter and her introduction to Ceremony 6, which was recorded on November the 30th, which would have been a week ago last Monday, in the Glastonbury Assembly Rooms.
It's awesome. It's really awesome. And what a year. Wow. It's heating up. Things heating up. People are beginning to join the dots to see the bigger picture. And some very reluctantly. Having just come from Bali through Jakarta and Abu Dhabi, it's been intense. I live in the rainforest, and I've been there 10 months now without television or radio or newspapers. And it's been an intense 10 months because it's been all about the learning. It's been about preparing internally for what that means. And it is the first ceremony within the phase of actualization. And I tell you, it hasn't got that word for nothing. It hasn't got that hang for nothing. Because it's bringing everything into your actual daily existence. And I know that a lot of you have already been feeling it, even though you haven't done the ceremonies between the 5th and the 11th. And I have been very much off the grid for that time. Although, because I joined Facebook a few months ago. Thanks. And my apologies to any of you I have offended, or unfriended, or refriended, and so on. But it's quite obvious that there is a very old and ancient program that has been bubbling away for a very long time and is now coming to the surface and showing us very clearly the agenda that has been in place for longer than we may imagine. We're going to dig into what that is a bit every day until we get a good and clear understanding of how it is the work that we're doing interfaces with what's going on in the planet. And also to understand that we chose this particular timeline in which to arrive and manifest in harmony. And he chose this for very specific reasons. And knowing that, and recalibrating your core identity to that knowledge is going to liberate you from feeling engaged in it or feeling taken over by the way it looks. When you understand that you didn't come despite the problems that are taking place, but because of them, and that it is in fact the global endgame scenario that's playing out that has brought you in the first place. Because it's an extremely potent and powerful time to be in the time. The portals open when at this stage in evolution. There are times in these great grand cycles that hold the power, the birth and the demise. We are harvesting the energies of culmination historically on the planet. And it's shocking, isn't it? It's really pretty shocking. Even if you have, for the last 10, 20 years, been studying all the various books and talking about the One World Order, the Illuminati, the puppeteers behind the scenes and the game that's being played with human consciousness and the heart scene of human energy. Even if you've been studying that and in your mind these many years, you have even attempted to play out what that was going to look like in terms of your everyday existence. Literally, from the time you wake up till the time you go to sleep, if you are able to go to sleep. And you think you can prepare yourself for the dynamics of what that might look like. And for many people, it came in very, very strongly at 9/11 when they came to understand that 9/11 was a setup to then engage the solution to the problem that they created. And that solution was the tightening up of all security against terrorism. Okay, so I think at that point, I was just putting something up this morning on Facebook for many people who have been contacting me in regards to getting off antidepressants. Because the use of the self-medicating people have been doing actually spiked massively after 9/11. Specifically in America, but all over the place. We actually went to America shortly after 9/11 took place, and people were very worried, and they had, it was the first time I had ever held ceremonies where the people that I was holding ceremonies for were talking to me about the fact that they were on Prozac and so forth. Because these were the alternative people. These were the people who were, you know, changing their diets and their lifestyles and going natural. And so it was really, that was the first time that I heard that. I was shocked, to be honest. Because prior to then, people were finding solace in meditation and yoga and so forth. That spike in self-medicating with antidepressants has actually grown steadily and spiked again. And I think that it is actually worse for those who don't know what's going on. Because they cannot own their process. They cannot acknowledge who they are, where they're from, or why they are here. So it's all buried underneath this mystery of why am I waking up in the morning in a complete state of anxiety and having panic attacks. But when you begin to reframe the situation and you understand that you have spent a great part of your life thinking that you had been born into a reality in which you thought certain things, that you believed in the benevolence of certain things that were there to support you, and that you believed in benevolent energies being in control of reality, and then all of a sudden you are realizing that there is an agenda that is absolutely massive and that it has the entire planet in its grip. And you are, what you have to understand is that we are all in, what do they call it, post-traumatic stress syndrome. We all have it. Yes? We all have it. But the difference is, we know what it is, and we know what we can do about it. And we know that we have come here because it's happened. That is so incredibly liberating. And it will begin to allow you to embrace your fearless self. And it will begin to allow you to foster your courage. And there will come a point where you'll begin to celebrate that you are here now as this is going on. Because never before was there an opportunity to access the back door. And I say the back door because recently I was having a conversation with a friend of ours from Australia who makes computer programs. And he said, Julia, in every program there's always a code, if you can find it, that will show you the back door out. Now, not only are we going to find the back door, we're going to be even open. And that is what we do. You come here for codes. And there is, if you look at history, there is no other time in the living memory of history where this opportunity arose. There is something very extraordinary taking place right now. There is changing of the gods. Very cosmic level. The, as you will find out when you start talking about ceremony 10, you will come to understand this on a deeper level astrologically when you come to see that the astrology is in fact a wheel of time that delineates term and dominion. Term and dominion. We have just in the last, I think, possibly 100, maybe more than that, 200, I'm not sure how long, which the changing of the God has actually been taking place, whereby one elite overlord who has had turned dominion over Earth has just, is in the process of having to let that go. And a new overlord is taking over. Does that make sense to you? Because if you look at what's going on in the news, you can identify those two energies. The old big boss is having a problem. And the new one is coming in. And what happens in any form of structure or organization when it all is going up and the news coming in? It all doesn't want to work. And the new wants to clear the board, wants to get rid of everyone who's ever in any power and set in place his new people or her new people over the game. It is a game, and it is raging on this planet right now. And those who have been in control are actually the new company. And we will talk more as the days go on and become more comfortable with all of this and be able to identify, if you haven't already, which you may well have. You need only really look at the United States to see that game playing out dramatically within politics. If you look at who is the president, who the president is there, and how that superpower is not that superpower anymore. And as soon as you realize that there is no American government, there is no English government, there are no governments. There are only puppets. They are all working in the hands of the puppeteers behind the scenes. And when you begin to understand this situation, you look at the board, the chessboard, you see where the pieces are. It really, rather than thinking that is going to suck you into the negativity or the fear, it's actually going to release you from it. Because if you're walking through a dark room full of stuff, you're going to just trip over everything once you turn the light on and look at where all that crap actually is. And when you begin to see the game, and you understand that you actually didn't come here to play. Has nothing to do with you. This is something I've actually learned at a much deeper level myself personally since the 11th ceremony, which Steve and I actually did for the first time last October in, not this last one, but the term before at the London Mountain in Australia. I came to recognize there are many different races in this planet. And I'm not talking about any races, I'm talking about all the people, I'm talking about all the humans on this planet from very different places who have had very different experiences on a soul level. And they hope they come from very different reasons. Some of them have literally come to take part in the battle. Some have come to just enjoy what they can while they can. You know who they are. If you find them in strange places, you will be able to always recognize them because they are people in some pseudo-spiritual areas that you might think want to know what's going on, but in actual fact, they have come just to exist within this environment, to experience the elements, to experience just being. Not everybody is looking for the back door. And not everybody realizes that is possible. Or even appropriate. And that's been a very good thing for me to get my head around because it's helped me to understand why some people that I would expect to know what's going on don't actually have a clue. So there's actually nothing to fear. There's nothing to fear. Probably the most dangerous thing to court is cognitive dissonance and denial of all that. Unless you're one of those people who just want to squeeze out the last party and the last few toys till the whole thing totally freaking collapses. I know I'm not here for that. So, that to a huge degree identifies the situation that we all find ourselves in here today. Because, I mentioned how, antidepressants and all the self-medication began at 9/11. Another amazing thing happened. Prior to 9/11, we did workshops, and people always were very, very focused on, okay, how is this going to make my life better? Okay, how am I going to have more money, better relationships, holidays, better job, more health? How is this going to make? And then finally, they realize that this reality is never going to work for you. It's not about working for you. That is about, all that is just functioning your prison cell. And, you know, you can do that for a while, take off and find another timeline, and, you know, then you're not here to find it. But what did happen after 9/11 is people started asking different questions. And they clicked through them. They understood, they came to understand that it wasn't their lives anymore that it was about. It was literally about the planet. It was about, the future. And they understood that, well, let me put it this way. In the Chinese, in one of the Chinese creation myths, hell is a huge banquet full of the most sumptuous food. And everybody has these huge long chopsticks and they can't get food in the house. And heaven is the same banquet and the same long chopsticks that they're feeding each other. And I think that's what hit everyone after 9/11, is they all understood the boat they were in together. So ceremonies really changed when people started to focus more on the physics of creation and the actual construction of reality and what it was they were actually experiencing in this world and what was real and what was not. So, what we are doing requires critical mass. It requires affecting the field, not just affecting our daily existence, but affecting the global field, the more genetic global field. It is literally about creating an entirely separate reality. And how we are doing that, obviously, is through the medium that actually creates and stabilizes all dimensions, and that's electromagnetism. So we come to the bottom line, and that is, the challenge is the degree to which we collectively and individually are capable of receiving, decoding, utilizing, and transmitting light. That's it. That is truly it. So I'll say it again. The entire exercise rests upon our ability to receive, decode, utilize, and transmit light into your field. Are you with me here?
Yes.
And every single ceremony has been about, and boy, when you get to the 10th and the 11th, you begin to see how these fields of electromagnetism that we are reestablishing are feeding into the sun. It's all about the sun, obviously, it's all about. Then you begin to see how huge of a funnel you are creating just within your one being of consciousness. Is a massive portal of light on this earth. And your challenge is to resurrect that funnel to see the overrise and transmit that. All of the stuff around what's happening in the world is actually background. It's all background. In fact, it's all there to inspire you. Because if it wasn't happening, you'd probably be quite complacent about your little span of life here on Earth. You just get on with it. But you're beginning to see that's really not going to be that possible. It's getting harder and more difficult and uncomfortable all the time. So that's kind of like grain of sand in the oyster that creates the pearl. All of that is just fertilizing. All of that crap you're watching going on around you is just fertilizing. And you are the pearl that is being created in the midst of all of that. So all these ceremonies are about returning electromagnetic life force back into the unit of circuitry in order to rejuvenate and resurrect the system that's going to allow you to receive, decode, utilize, transmit life. And that system is your endocrine system. And of course your pineals is like the major gland within that whole orchestration of light absorbability. Now, the first five ceremonies that you have already done, we did not realize that those five ceremonies were all foundation ceremonies. In fact, when the sixth ceremony came along, we thought we were done. That was it. We were heading through the hill. Job done. Let's get on with it. So the ceremony seven was a big shock. What we did not understand was that the sixth ceremony was the first ceremony in the actualization and integration ceremony. Hands up if you didn't know them. So you're all... So basically, today, the sixth ceremony begins the second phase in the resurrection of the endocrine system and our ability to utilize the information embedded in light. That carries on until the 10th. And this is where the hologram actually starts to reveal itself very dramatically. You've got five foundation ceremonies. Those five ceremonies, they are literally only, but it's a very big only, to get your circuitry in position in order to be activated and integrated and then actualized. Okay, so today, ceremony, the sixth ceremony, activates and integrates the first ceremony.
So that's the first part of Juliet's talk on Ceremony 6. My apologies for the quality of the sound there. I was just trying to adjust my mic. I wasn't expecting to actually broadcast these recordings. I was believing that they were just going to be for my personal use, and it's quite a surprise to find that that we are going to be now making it more general, as it were. I need to get a bit more practice at Audacity, and my fellow hosts, actually, having heard what's going out, will no doubt be able to help me make sure that future broadcasts from these workshops that we were doing will be slightly better. There's a lot of creaky chairs. The chairs in there were absolutely abysmal, it has to be said. What Juliet was saying at the end there is as much a revelation to her as it was to the rest of us. We have, this being a new thing, we have been exploring it together, and I don't think anybody really knew where it was going. But what's effectively happening is that Ceremony 1, the fundamental purpose was firstly to reconnect the first 12 circuits into our biosystem. And the effect of that was fundamentally to address levels of fear in the human entity, which was certainly something that happened to me It also addressed the distribution of power in personal relationships, especially between male and female, but in my opinion, my experience in all human relationships, all of that changed. I found myself in a lot less trouble with the people around me because I'd started taking on the peace, the kind of peaceful approach that is talked about so often here. So levels of fear, distribution of power in personal relationships. And the other thing it addressed is our relationship to all of our reflections, because as I've spoken about before, a lot of what we see coming back to us from the world is almost by definition a result of what we are putting out to it. And one of the first things, well, the very first thing we did in that first ceremony was confront ourselves in the mirror. We use the mirror in the first ceremony, or geometry, but I personally prefer using the mirror because it makes it much more clear what it is that we're trying to achieve. And as we said before, it doesn't really matter how many banners you wave and how many slogans you shout. It's only when you're prepared to address yourself and the shadow within yourself that you start to address the problems you see in the world around you. And this, of course, is one of the confusions that the world management team is fundamentally relying on to keep us confused. We believe that what we are seeing outside ourselves is genuinely outside us, but in fact we are a huge biochemical reaction, a huge response to the world which we ourselves to a certain extent are creating. Because although the cosmos appears to be a huge place and that the world appears to be concrete about us, our understanding of it, our experience of it, is entirely internal. It is inside of us. Now, I think that one of the first things that Juliet said there was one of the most important, and that is this idea that we actually chose to be here. That we're not here at this time in spite of all of the shite that's going down around us. We are here because we chose to be here at this time, and we are here because that is happening. And again, I think the kind of mission that People's Internet Radio is on is absolutely bang down the line on that, because we are addressing it. We are recognizing that to a more than large extent, what it is that we're dealing with is our own sense of fear and separation. And as has been said many times by many what we might call leaders in our field, one of the first stages to addressing this particular challenge is to move beyond our fear, to be able to take courageous action. And I agree with Juliet that the understanding that we are here because of all of this is actually tremendously liberating. It certainly gives me a better understanding of a sense of mission that I appear to have had since I was very, very young. The idea also that we are harvesting the energies of culmination, which is a shocking idea, has interesting parallels in what we know the world management team are doing. They are certainly harvesting the energies of culmination in all sorts of ways which we find completely unacceptable. The energies of culmination on their part in the sense of war and killing. And of course, if you're of a Catholic persuasion, then every Sunday you are apparently eating the body and drinking the blood of a man. And the list is practically endless if we were going to go looking for how the world management team uses this technique. We'd find similarities between blood rituals and what goes on in courts, what goes on in all sorts of places. The thing is, that this is, and well, it looks like, and it almost certainly is, the end of some sort of age, the end of perhaps thousands of years of this sort of behaviour. And it is that energy of culmination which we're trying to harvest and use when we engage in the template ceremonies. It is a time of great change. It is an opportunity to step in and start taking the advantage. Certainly, we now know that huge games are being played with human consciousness, that there are all manner of puppeteers pulling the strings of all sorts of people. It's these games with human consciousness are played through advertising, through television, through elections, through false flag operations. We are aware that it is no longer simply a matter of misrepresentation, that it's now downright and demonstrable lies that are being told, a thing that has become clearer and clearer to us here, but which apparently is still completely invisible to many of the people we have around us. The 9/11 gig that Juliet refers to was possibly the biggest game changer that we've seen for a long time. And I think it's still true that although the great disappearing of buildings really woke a lot of people up, there are still many who perhaps haven't taken that any idea any further and seen the extension of it throughout history, because we know that it was simply the biggest and best version of such an operation over the years. And there are operations that continue, and we don't really need to go into any detail about that. But I doubt whether there's a single person in the chat box or listening who would disagree with that. It's interesting, isn't it, that people who've previously been engaging in meditation and yoga to keep themselves in a space of stillness are apparently taking to antidepressants as a means of keeping themselves in some sort of shape. And that tendency is still growing. It is my suspicion that this is coming about because of a new age tendency not to look at the more shadowy sides of life, to try and keep everything light and fluffy. I know from my own experience that endeavouring in some circles to bring up these subjects can get you demonised pretty quickly. There is a sense in which people seem to believe that looking at this stuff will in some sense suck you into the mayhem. Whereas in fact, as we were talking about earlier, solutions can't be found unless we have some sort of idea of the nature of the problem. And that, certainly from my own point of view, yoga and meditation and stuff are extremely helpful in dealing with the impression that the world leaves with me. They're probably helpful as well if you're not looking at it, but perhaps it might be difficult to deal with the world without antidepressants, unless one is looking at this more difficult side. And this is another thing that sprung up in one of the workshops, is that vaccines still turn out to be a huge surprise to people who we might expect to know better. The antidepressants are part of the same problem. And many of the alternative people that I know, sooner than trying to investigate whatever the physical problem might be and see if there is some kind of natural solution, will instantly go scuttling off to the not healthy service to try and find the solution that they're looking for. I know I was like that. Many of the things I was practicing were actually useful to me, but it did take me a long time to realize that, that for me personally, I mean, I'm sure that there is help for some people there, but for me personally, it was never anything more or less than a pretty damaging experience. And also, that the things I've tried since, things like the Bowen technique, like kinesiology, have actually worked really well for me on problems that were proving to be intractable. And my most recent experience of, I think, basically being in a state of near collapse, my physical self was really not working very well at all. Then engaging with Clive DeCarle's solutions of topping myself up on the elements that I need, on things like sulfur and magnesium, and making sure my body had the stuff necessary to digest and process all the stuff that was going into it, has worked really well. I suddenly find myself no longer needing a nap in the afternoon, although I do still like to have one if I can. I certainly don't need to sleep for 3 hours. Everything is working lots better. So big thanks to Clive for that one. And of course, those solutions, the solutions of being able to detoxify ourselves and revivify ourselves with the elements and minerals we need, are being narrowed down also by the world management team. And it probably is more difficult for people to sort things out if they don't know what the hell's going on, as Juliet put it, if they don't own their own process. Many of us don't know who we are, where we are, or why we're here. Many of us don't understand that he who controls the past controls the present, and he who controls the present controls the future. It is important, if we're going to find out where we're going and where we are, to have some idea of where it is that we've been. And again, far from being a depressing idea, these are ideas that liberate us. And hearing these sort of things makes me realize why it is that despite all of the stuff we've been learning about for all of these years, most of us manage to stay pretty chirpy most of the time. It's been a bit of a puzzle to me. But of course, I think the idea that knowledge of these things is liberating us from slavery rather than the other way around is as good an explanation of any as to what's going on. Those who don't know don't own their own process. Ignorance is not bliss. As we said, knowledge of the problem is, unless you're very, very psychic and extremely intuitive, knowledge of the problem is going to be an essential part for the vast majority of us of embodying any kind of solution at all. And the New Age ignores this shadow, ignores these facts, at its own peril, I think. And as I say, in many places, it actually shouts down those of us who do endeavour to address in the public sphere some of these problems. And we're all forced to reframe the ideas that we've got from the mistaken belief in the benevolence of the processes we see around us. I know that Synchro made the point to me once that she assumed that the people who are apparently running the show actually wanted peace, that's what the basic aim was, and that the war that was arising around us was somehow unavoidable, until eventually, in a moment, she realized that these people do not want peace. Otherwise, there would not be wars waging all over the planet. Otherwise, we would not have had no peace since the Second World War, or the First World War, or the One Great War, as we might more actively call it. And what we need to recognize is that as long as anybody wants to fight, there isn't going to be any peace. And that this is the direction that things are being taken at the moment. It is now absolutely clear that benevolence is not the driving force behind the people who claim to govern us. And I think things are changing along those lines. There are many different sorts of people in Glastonbury. It is a bit like a kind of festival disguised as a town. If you haven't been there, it is a thoroughly unique place to go. But in the evenings after the ceremonies, we did wander around Glastonbury, go out and find ourselves some food and all the rest of it. And as well as meeting a lot of people we know from around the country, which is always the case, it's a real melting pot there, we made contact on a daily basis after the ceremonies with people who we didn't know. They're very willing to talk. And we've been going there for many years, and my feeling is that it used to be the case that even in Glastonbury, one would find the kind of ideas that we're talking about here to be difficult to get across. My feeling was that everybody that we met and chatted with whilst we were there was actually pretty open to what's going on, even if they weren't ideas that perhaps had been put across before. And this applies both to our chats with people about the ceremonies, which was obviously one of our main themes, but as is always the way of things, we do find ourselves constantly talking about the handing over of power, the registration process, the nature of money, the nature of government. And I do find in Glastonbury and elsewhere that these ideas are now a lot more acceptable. People are not getting so excited and so uppity when we try to address these things. When I first started listening to PIR and TNS and the rest, there was a tendency in, I think, most of the people I met to invoke a slide response pretty quickly when one got into the more difficult subjects. You could just see the shutters coming down. It's clear, isn't it? When people are no longer listening to what one is saying, that slide response, it seems to me, is weakening. And perhaps this is partly due to the fact that I've got a bit better at putting across the ideas, but I think that the field is changing. And we are trying, as individuals, to project light into the field rather than the shadow. So when we talk about these things, it is because we feel that we have solutions that are worth thinking about. There's no point in just sitting there talking about the crap that's happening if one isn't willing to talk about the potential for change. And I find it very rewarding and a lot less exhausting that people are more willing, apparently, to take these things up. And of course, as Juliet says, the agenda that's running, the agenda that doesn't want peace, the agenda that is somehow just seeking power for the sake of power, and all of that, has the entire planet in its grip. Juliet says she lives in the rainforest, which is where she spends a lot of her time. I can't imagine what it must have been like landing yourself in Glastonbury from somewhere like that. It's always difficult enough moving into cities from mid Wales, where, you know, things are pretty busy. There's a lot of traffic. It's not a lot compared with other places, but there are sirens. It's like a lesser fractal, as it were, of a major city. But to come to that from a shack in the rainforest, and to put yourself in front of a load of people and work so hard must be really quite a challenge, I would have thought. It always takes me a while to adjust to cities. Although, again, as things were, my fight and flight response used to be engaged pretty damn quickly once I got into a city. I couldn't really stay in there very long, even before I started working with all of this stuff. I find it a lot less of a problem now. I find it a lot more stimulating. I know that there are places where the work needs to be done, and there are places where the opportunities to do the work arise. We are beginning to understand the nature of the problem and what it is we need to do. And I'm glad to see that some people in the chat box clearly have also reached the conclusion that ceremonial activity and certainly shared intent and working as a group are solutions that are getting us back interconnection with what we truly are. It doesn't do us any good to foster cognitive dissonance, to try to deal with things that are making us feel profoundly uneasy, unless we are willing to embrace our fearless self and foster the courage that arises within us. And again, it has to be emphasized that the overcoming of fear is one of our main challenges. I think that Julia in the workshop put it really well when she said that as we find out about these things, the most important thing is that we don't invest what we are hearing about with any emotional charge, that we don't become personally involved with it. It really is, if we are peaceful people trying to do our best for ourselves and for the world, it really is nothing to do with us, this stuff. One of the main deceptions that is being perpetrated is that it is something to do with us. They are definitely trying to blame, for example, the changing climate on the population, producing too much carbon and all the rest of it. But the same people who are doing that are justifying the building of nuclear power stations, for example, by suggesting that they are carbon neutral. It is by concentrating on simply the carbon element or the global warming gases or whatever it is we want to call them, that is distracting people from the fact that governments all over the world are trying to control the weather. And if anybody's responsible for the kind of chaos that's going on, it is possibly them. The carbon thing doesn't take account of the fact that climate is changing throughout the solar system. Venus is getting hotter, Mars is getting hotter, Jupiter's changing the way it looks. The whole thing is somehow changing. And by trying to blame it on us, by trying successfully in many cases to make us believe that it is somehow our responsibility, we are being convinced to give things emotional charge that are just not worthy of it. As was put in the chat box earlier on, where attention goes, energy flows. It is, under these circumstances, important that as we search into this stuff, that we approach it with the correct attitude, an attitude which is fearless and which knows when we are responsible for something and when we are not. It is obviously important. One of the things we're doing here is accepting responsibility for what it is that we're doing. And I believe the template specifically aids this process. I think that People's Internet Radio does as well, but I think they're kind of on a different level, if you like. One of them is a level which deals with our everyday life, with the way we're dealing with people and all the things that I talk about so much. The other one is an attempt to affect things energetically, electromagnetically, in terms of light. When she talks about projecting light into the field, that is one of the things we're doing when we treat people properly, when we treat people with respect. When we realize that when somebody is upset or angry or whatever it is, that there are many ways we can make the situation worse, and there are ways which we as individuals can make it better. And if we're concentrating on the latter, things are going to go a lot more easily for us and for the individuals that we encounter as we wander around the place. Of course, it's important as well to, as well as recognizing what's going on, to then take some action. It is important to project this into the field, to begin, even in the tiniest ways that we can, to smooth out the wrinkles and to pour oil on troubled waters. I really love Juliet's idea as well, that somewhere in all of this there is a back door, that there, in like in computer programs, there's a back door in the programs. I suspect it's to enable people to get in when they need to, but we can go out through the indoor. That's not a problem. And I love the idea that our aim is not only to find the door, but to leave it open. And we're aware, again, on People's Internet Radio, that in many circumstances where it appears there is no remedy, there is a remedy. There are some places where money really counts, places such as the mortgages and the apparent property ownership, where it's quite difficult to take evasive action, because the first individual that successfully does that could well collapse the whole system. But on a lower level, on the level of licensing, say the TV license, remedy is really fairly simple. And tickets from private parking agencies and people who insist on painting double yellow lines on the ground and then charging us for parking on them and all that kind of stuff. These are the beginnings of remedy. Even, as far as I can tell, some of the legislation which we find ourselves being accidentally bound by has within it remedy, because the people that are running the show themselves need to ensure that they're not going to fall foul of it. So the first part of a remedy is recognition of the problem, and the second part of the remedy is actually taking action. Knowledge without action is nothing. The thing about term and dominion is something that I know many people find quite challenging. This is because, although there are a whole, I don't know what kind of portion of humanity it is that believes that there are extraterrestrial stroke interdimensional presences on Earth, there's certainly a lot of people who don't. And I mean, that's fair enough, isn't it? We accept that. We accept that actually first-hand experience is the only experience we can have, and that in a way, everything else is kind of a rumour. I myself have never met, as far as I know, an interdimensional or extraterrestrial entity. But I do have a tendency, on balance, to think that they are here, and that they have been here for quite a long time. It is a central part of the template that this is the case, that a long, long time ago, entities arrived here and somehow manipulated the genetics of human beings to make it harder for us to be the things that we know we want to be. And that on a large scale, what we're seeing at the moment is a changing of the guard. This is kind of something that we do touch on occasionally when we're talking about the Pope's motu proprio, about his instruction to remove the limited liability shield that is currently enjoyed by the corporations that are robbing us and raping the planet. Is very definite, does very definitely have that kind of look about it. As Juliet mentioned, we have a different kind of president, apparently, in the White House. There does seem to be a massive shift of power from one place to another. In the long run, this won't make much difference to us. It probably won't make that much difference to the world management team either. They'll just carry on doing what they've done before. But we don't have to look at it very closely to see that there is evidence of just what she's talking about there, of a change in the in who's running what. And that change, there's going to be a bit of a hiatus. There is a bit of a hiatus. And that again is part of our opportunity. It's part of an opportunity to start doing things differently. And with or without ceremonies, with or without an understanding of these energetic, electromagnetic, subtle inputs that are going on, people are just becoming aware of that. People are recognizing that this is going on. And of course, it might be it would be easy to fear the movement of power from apparently the United States to apparently China or the Middle East or wherever it's going next. The most important thing, as usual and as with everything, is not to fear it, but to engage in other activities to make, as Synchro and I put it, energetic progress in another direction. I think at this time, when there is a big change occurring, we probably get more benefit from making this kind of move than we would at normal times. Another thing that really strikes me in terms of the handing over of power is that for thousands of years, we've had Christianity as one of the main religions on the planet. For a while in my life, I was an evangelical Christian going around knocking on people's doors, offering to talk to them about God's government and all that sort of stuff. I believe that the exemplar that is given in Christianity, which I think there's like 1,000 different sorts of Christianity, maybe 2,000 million people on the planet, maybe more, who follow this. And yet, a link that was put into the PIR chat box a few weeks back to a fabulous YouTube video called Caesar's Messiah, the Roman Conspiracy to Invent Jesus, really does pull the rug out from under that one in quite an impressive way. And that could be regarded as evidence of a changing of the guard, couldn't it? That's a major change. Now, there are going to be a lot of people who find it very difficult to take that on board because they believe themselves to have a personal relationship with Jesus or however it works, and I can understand that because that's how I felt it to be. But if you watch that video, you will see that it is pretty much bang to rights, that all is not what it appears to be. It's quite a shocking idea, I think, even to those of us who don't have anything emotionally invested in it, to discover that the figure of Jesus Christ was, in all likelihood, in all probability, in fact, in my mind, it's a pretty good proof, was actually a Roman emperor called Titus Flavius. That's an outrageous change to be making. We can see a move from the competing religions, apparently competing religions, of course, of Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, to apparently a one-world religion. I think we've yet to see the new saviour arise, but that is definitely something which is going on. That, again, is a really, really big change. So, in a way, it doesn't matter whether you're on the side of people who believe in extraterrestrials and their presence here for thousands of years and their genetic manipulation of the human gene code and all that kind of stuff, or whether you don't believe in it. Because the evidence is that one way or the other, and for whatever reason, this is exactly what's going on here. Absolutely great to hear somebody saying in the public arena that there is no American government, there is no English government, there are no governments, they are all puppets. We know this to be the case, but not everybody does. And once again, it's one of the places where I think the template procedure is doing us all a great favour by actually continuing to attract a steady wave of people who are maybe getting to hear about this stuff for the first time. I think it's true to say that most, probably the majority of the people who come along do know something about some of the things that we're talking about here. But in almost all circumstances, there will be things that are news to them. It is just a massive game, and concentrating, actually having a look at it, is not going to suck you in to all of the negativity and the shadow. It is actually going to liberate you from it. In fact, there is no way of coming across liberation unless we do pay some attention to these things. We didn't come here to play the game. It isn't anything to do with us. I would tend to agree with that. That actually looking at the play pieces, looking at the nature of the board, trying to apprehend what is going on is an important move. I also like to think that we did certainly didn't come here to be play pieces. It's possible we came here to be players of the game. I feel that's one of the changes that's going on. I know that's the way Simon Spaniard likes to look at it. And I can see that energetically, that's a very helpful way. That's a very helpful way to deal with it. We also, I think, are aware that some people just don't want to change. There's all sorts of people here, apparently, they're here for all sorts of reasons. And without a doubt, some are just here to enjoy it. And why not? Why not? If it's not actually simply a matter of a dualistic world, if it is a matter of learning freedom of choice in order to choose love rather than have it forced upon us, then it's absolutely fair enough that people do what they do, enjoy what they can while they can. This is another aspect of the template which I particularly admire, is that it does try to be even-handed in its treatment of people. We are not interested in laying guilt trips on anybody, and we recognise that everybody has choices to make, which they will make. One of the places where it's perhaps a little difficult to spot this sort of thing going on is in what Juliet calls pseudo-spiritual areas. People who we might expect to know what's going on and to want to improve it, who in fact, when examined more closely, they are, in a sense, here to have fun. And it seems to me that the religion that has been given the name New Age, is exactly such an area. It can be quite hard to discern the one thing from the other. But even-handedness and willingness, equanimity, willingness to let other people do what they're doing as we wish to be left alone to do what we do, is really important recognition in itself. And again, it's a recognition which helps us to be peaceful and equanimous in our approach to the people around us. It's, I suppose, a kind of aspect of forgiveness, but as we said before, real forgiveness is the recognition that there is nothing to forgive. People are people doing what people do. And I think it is quite clear now that the world that we've got, as expressed, is not going to work for us. It's just not. And that's another of the changes that has occurred over time, is that people are realizing that making the world better for ourselves by simply expanding our own comfort zones, by expanding our own resource, as it were, our own resource base, is not helpful. One of the things that's causing, I think, an enormous amount of grief is the storing up of the meaningless promissory tokens in bank accounts. In its proper form, the currency, the money, the tokens, whatever it is we want to call them, is an exchange of energy, and it needs to be kept flowing. Stacking loads of it up in one place doesn't do anybody any favours. Probably not even the people who are stacking it up one way or the other, because they're really in the same position as the rest of us. It's just that most of us haven't got so much to lose. It just means that when the audio hits the air conditioning, there is just going to be a much bigger shock. It is important to realise that this game is not about me. It's about us. It's not about individual lives. It's about the future of our people and the future of our planet and the future of all the things that live on it. Those things that, of course, have not already been driven apparently to extinction. And we can't hope to fix it, because as has been acknowledged many times here before, it's not actually broken. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do, which is harvest our fear and our resource and our equity and put it in places where it is most definitely not going to be to our use and to our advantage. And it's possible that this subjugation, this deception, this misleading of us just completely blinds many of us to the potential of a wholly new paradigm. it can be very difficult to recognize in what is seemingly a physical world with a load of stuff rolling on, with more or less unstoppable force, that a new paradigm is possible. But we need to bear in mind there the worlds that have been occupied by shamans for time immemorial. These guys, they can do some pretty amazing things, and again, we've talked about that on the show, that demonstrably, when you read the anthropological works, shamans are producing magical results. They do seem to be able to visit, to occupy, to take advantage of and use worlds that are perhaps not as material as the worlds that we live in. We need to recognize that the new physics is showing us that the world is not as concrete as we think it is. Possibly not concrete at all. This is a challenge that gave even the physicists that discovered it a whole lot of difficulty, because physics, being the queen of sciences, is supposed to deal with answers to questions, and the answers that are coming about now are not necessarily acceptable in physical terms, even though physics is the name of the game. In fact, we are really being forced to recognize that physics and spirituality are in effect the same thing, and that again is really turning the game on its head. Things are genuinely changing around us, and when we talk about things like the template ceremonies, or indeed ceremony generally, we are recognizing this fact. We are recognizing that this uncertainty principle, and we are ourselves engaging in shamanic work. I've done a bit of shamanic traveling myself, shamanic journeying with some people who kindly guided me through it, and it was actually a tremendously interesting and, as far as I'm concerned, personally exciting and rewarding experience. But I have come to recognize that the biggest shamanic project that I have actually undertaken are these particular ceremonies. And for me personally, and for many of the people that I've witnessed joining in with me, I can feel the transformation in myself. I can see the transformation in other people, particularly, I think, after the first ceremony. But it is true to say that several of the people that I met last year for the first time when we went to do ceremonies 7 through 10, that they had changed. People who were really quite intense and quite full of, I don't know what really to call it, just so full of stuff that they couldn't stop it coming out. They're just so relaxed this time when I saw them. Now, it might be, of course, that other things have changed for them, but it's so common in the template, although not, it has to be said, absolutely universal, that I really do connect the two things, and I recognize the changes I see in others, in myself, and people who know me have recognized those changes over the years as well. So it's all down to us collectively recognizing that light is not just light. It is energy, it is warmth, and it is information. And that one of the things that has occurred to us, is that our ability to receive light and to decode it and project it back into the field has been limited by whatever means. And that's important, because if we're not projecting light into the field, then we're not boosting its ability to actually see to itself. It's something I think that David Bohm recognized when he was trying to deal with the conundrums that are raised by modern physics, and it was his conclusion, which I think is slowly but surely being verified by other members of the physics community, that we're living somehow in an explicate world that is based upon and which draws itself from a hidden and an implicate realm. And in Bohm's opinion, what we're doing in this explicate world is important. And at the moment, he felt what we're doing is somehow polluting the intricate order in the way we're behaving. So what it is that's arising is actually being distorted in other energetic areas, and changing our attitude, changing our feedback is going to change the way things work out for us. The actual structure of the ceremonies, which I got a bit distracted from there for a while, is that the first ceremony, as I said, deals with the distribution of power in personal relationships, the reduction of fear, and helping us to deal with our reflections and recognize them as such. It is a new realization, and I think probably the major realization of recent times for all of us, that the sixth ceremony, the one that we've been talking about a little bit about today, involves the activation and integration of the circuits that we reconnected in the first ceremony. So ceremony six is a revisiting a deeper level and at a more profoundly effective level, the main issues of ceremony one, probably all of the issues in ceremony one. The one that we did for the first time this year, ceremony 11, is the actualization of ceremony six and ceremony one. So those things also come up again in a different form, requiring us to deal with them. If we haven't dealt with them before, we're going to have to deal with them this time. But it is my impression that that difficult relationships become easier with each stage. Clearly, this is still very fresh in my mind and in my energetic system. Mostly with these ceremonies, it's only two or three months down the line that I start realizing the changes that have been made. This time around, I believe the impact has been pretty instantaneous. I'm still buzzing, effervescing from the experience of that ceremony. There's a bit of me that believes that probably this is it, that I am different, that the world is a slightly more colourful, slightly lighter, slightly less terrifying thing than it was before. And this is just the very beginning of that process. Previously, I would have regarded this as very bad news, because of course if ceremony 6 activates ceremony 1 and ceremony 11 actualizes ceremony 6 and 1, then that means that we now have somehow to manage ceremonies 12, 13, 14 and 15. It's because they are going to do for ceremonies 2, 3, 4 and 5 what ceremony 11 did. So even after all this time, this is the first time we've actually recognized that. As I say, with my attitudes before, it would have, because I would have been thinking, oh, look, we've been traveling backwards and forwards to Glastonbury for years for this experience. And now we've got to keep on doing it. Actually, as things stand, I find that a pretty exciting idea. I don't resent it at all. The only thing I find myself hoping is that we have the time left to do the work, to actually find out where it is that all of this is going to go. But I'm happy to stick with it for as long as it's running, personally. This stuff has been put in my way because it's useful to me. I get a lot of backup from Synchro, who I know feels the same thing, and obviously from other people involved in it. It probably doesn't mean that it's for everybody. And, you know, we recognize that explicitly by saying some people just don't want to change. It's not what they're here for. Some people will find other ways of changing, but I'm really hoping that because I am who I am, and because I have the extreme privilege of broadcasting to all you good people that are out there, I'm seriously hoping that we can attract more people to it. It means get a chance to meet more of you in meat space, as it were. And of course, I will be able to continue to transmit some of the things that we're discovering at the in the question and answers that arise in the ceremonies that we're actually doing. So I think on that note, we've got a bit more of Juliet to come. And probably a bit more comment from me as well. Time, as usual, is just zapping by. I don't know what happens to the clock on this computer when I'm broadcasting. I swear it speeds up. But what I'm going to do is give you a bit of a break as well. I'm going to play a bit of music. And I think it's apposite that I play a track we haven't heard for a while, by Tracy Curtis, called If the Death Penalty Were an Olympic Sport, because it, because it does, I think, very punchily remind us of the nature of the world that we're living in. And, it's going to be followed by a track by Nuala Hoonan, who I saw at, some festival last year, can't remember, and that track's called Wake and Howl. So we've got about 7 or 8 minutes, and then I'll come back to you. Nuala Hoonan there, and her track Wake and Howl from the album The Tortoise. Quite a beautiful tune there, I thought. A bit more gentle than what we normally play, and I'd say Wake and Sing, that's what I'd say. So I'm going to return to Juliet's introduction, which I've hopefully got lined up here, about another 15 or so minutes of that to go, and come back to you with a bit more comments and a bit more music. I guess that Tony and his compadre are going to be on after Dr. Rock at midnight playing some tunes, and whilst I'm remembering Tony, also thanks to Nick, of course, for a great show before Dr. Rock. It is really great having shows either side. Thanks to both of you, all of you, for being there. So here we come with the second bit of tonight's slightly iffy but audible recording, and hopefully by the time we get onto more of this, I'll have mastered it all a little bit better. Here we go. A bit more Juliet. Hang on, I need to find my buttons.
It's a hologram, and each piece is a fractal that, when it's put in place, works on the its relative fractals and brings them to a more intense dynamic level. We didn't know this when we held Ceremony 6, and we did not know that we're actually dealing with Ceremony 1. I was just talking to one of the ambassadors today about Ceremony 11 and how utterly intense that was, and that's because it's actualizing Ceremony 1 and 6, and 6 is activating Ceremony 1. So it's super potent. And it's potent in the most uncomfortable way, because it's, what are you dealing with in Ceremony 1? What's the first thing you do in Ceremony 1? Look in the bloody mirror. And you have to deal with yourself. You have to deal with it. All your initiatives to yourself, to creation, to life, to death, to each other, to your relationships, it all comes up today. And then it comes up again at the 11th. Personally, I think if you're one of those people who are doing the 6, the 1, 6, and the 11 all at once, you're darn lucky to just get the whole bloody thing over at once at all. Because each one actually speeds up the other one. So you don't have this long, drawn-out gap of having to look at it all before you've got enough electromagnetism to actually integrate much quicker into yourself. Some people think that it's harder, and they don't know how to say, oh, I need to give myself some time to wallow in this pain. But after that, it's better to get over. Hey, I've been with Jeeva and I have been on one circuit for 30 years. So the 6th is when you begin to talk and spheres, if you like. Because the 6th is where the circuits begin to become spheres that do not penetrate the body, but go around it, and around it, and around it, and out further and further, as the identity expands beyond this dualistic mortal realm. So the first one is where it touches the very edges of the sphere that all the other circuits have already made. So it is actually having effect on all of the other segments, and they all do, because that's the nature of a hologram. It's impossible to isolate anything in a hologram. But we have, to a certain degree, because we have to, we are in this realm, we're dealing with linear time. If we weren't, then we could probably just create the whole pot and pour into it, and it could all be done in 5 minutes. Really cool. I'd love to see that happen one day. But right now, we are dealing with duality in linear time. So we have to take this model, this holonomic model, and somehow lay it out to work through time. What actually has inspired them? Made that possible. The two events, both of which happened in Hawaii on the Big Island, when we lived there. Hands up if you've read The World Vision. So I should say hands up if you haven't read The World Vision. Very few people. So you were quite off the level of the story I'm about to say. But you might have an idea of it anyway. Everyone's favorite chapter 7, and Green Mountain, yes? And we, how many of you, even though you didn't know the great book, how many of you are not aware that Jiva and I came face to face with two reptilian humanoids on top of the mountain? Is that just this gentleman here? We are, so as most of you know, we had just come out actually of prison, Jiva and I, for the growth and distribution of what we like to call ginger. For legal reasons. And we had just done some house arrest, and all that. We moved to the town in the coast of Kokopo. And for my 400 hours of community service, I was reconnecting with OSB service in the water settlement before I realized at that time. It's a long story. The information started coming in while I was actually incarcerated. We, as you know, we got these various signals that we needed to go to this place called Green Mountain, which was a lake, was in fact the lake with the green, the mountain next to it. But instead of being on the lake, by the lake, we decided for the very first time to climb the mountain. And as you've all read, we had the interaction with these two beings who were wearing holograms, and as a result of that interaction, we were actually thrust into a major state of very raw self-cognition. I think it was, you could call it a shamanic initiation, a kundalini activation. But what we discovered was ourselves conscious in a transcendent reality. It was this planet, we were ourselves, although we looked very, very different. We were still human in that respect, but we looked very different. The geographical position of the rainforest, the mountain, the beach, everything was the same, but it was in a much higher transcendent state of expression. In that there was no shadow, and that everything was communion with everything else. There was no separation, and yet there was autonomous sentient sovereignty. Everything was what they would term in Hindu states of that kind of consciousness, Chinta Deva Dhatu, which means inconceivably simultaneously one and different. There was no fear. That was the most blissful aspect of the experience, apart from the visuals which were just beyond what any form of visionary art that I've seen since. What we were experiencing was ourselves, I believe, in the future, from where we've come. What we were experiencing is the full manifestation of this planet, which is happening right as we speak. That can't be destroyed, but what we are in this room, in this reality right now, what we are experiencing is a lower octave of the third dimension called duality. So what we are experiencing is only a fraction of the language of light manifesting form. The light is information. Light is not just something that illuminates space. It carries a code. It is the source code. The source code that originally emanates from the benevolence of creation, as the monad differentiates in order to experience relationship and relationship love. That life force is then differentiates through various systems of manifestation, through galaxies and solar systems and suns and pioneers. Our pioneer is the sun within our body, so which is our main solar system. So the sun, as we see it now, is a transducer. What the sun is doing is it is receiving, decoding, utilizing, and transmitting the source code of light. An even more prime code than that which we are picking up as humans on this planet. So every ray of light is encoded with a stream of transubstantiated code information. We, as units of human biocircuitry, were originally created, the masterpiece of our original divine human movement, was in full resonance with that source code of life. This is really important because it relates to every ceremony. It relates to the core thing that I mentioned earlier as to what the human challenge is on this planet. We see, we grow, we rise, and so on. So our original human masterpiece, our divine immortal genetic movement, is fully resonant with the source code of light transmitted by our sun. This takes me back to the prologue of World Vision, where the Mayan king takes all of the plant medicine and he watches the sunrise and he wants to embrace the sun fully. He wants to experience his full resonance as a light body being. And he realizes he cannot because he has been genetically modified and he is incapable of full resonance. So the spectrum of light we are resonating with at this time is muted. Out of 3 billion base pair chemicals, only 60 million are active. So we are not able to receive, decode, and transmit that consciousness into the field. And so what we have a muted field of consciousness that is functioning on separation and fear and duality. What is the main rule that stabilizes duality is that for something to live, something is there. We are all under the auspices of that law here, except the Breatharians. And even they, by proxy, are having to deal with it, because even if you are vegan or whatever, there's something to live, something must die. That is being played out in absolutely every human relationship. You think about it, of course, the ultimate one, which is war and genocide. So, what is being created in this reality is a mutant paradigm that is reliant upon the modified degree of light we are capable of receiving in these ones, feeding back into the field. And this is, you know, this is happening for so many reasons. I'm not sure this is the time to go into those reasons, but if we need to later, we can revisit that. That is the state of affairs. There are many reasons that has occurred, and we know why and who and when. But the reason I bring it up now is because on Green Mountain, we found ourselves in the transcendent realm. A realm that is functioning upon the full spectrum paradigm of light and warmth. So we experience ourselves, our planet, our environment, in a realm in which light is being fully utilized. And it was stunning. It was why I'm sitting here today. I think they call it reverse engineering, right? That's why we were given that experience, was it 20, maybe more than 20 years ago? I've lost track. Because what we were given was the full ultimate experience of a human being that was capable of functioning on its full genetic divine movement. And the reality in which that human being would be interfacing with consciousness would be representing itself as a fractal aspect of the benevolence of creation, would be experiencing itself as God. So that was a very clever thing to happen at that point, because it's haunted every day since, honestly, absolutely. And it was made very, very clear the various things that happened that did not get into the book. That for us, our lives from that point onward were entirely about reverse engineering how we got there, so that it could be shared as a holonomic model of transcendence. How we have managed to do it, I'm gobsmacked. As I'm as gobsmacked as you are, pretty much on a daily level. There's obviously some form of collaboration between ourselves and some other consciousness that is assisting us. I said two things happened. The other thing was a dream that I personally had around the same time, whereby everything was explained to me. All of what I taught from that day forward was explained to me by a presence in my dream. And Jesus said, I woke up saying, of course, it's so obvious, it's so simple, it's so clear, and I woke up and I couldn't remember a damn thing. You know how that is, yes. And but you can't unring a bell. That bell was rung somewhere in the deep psyche when I understood. And somehow, by putting myself in deep states, like, you know, living in the rainforest, and literally, I don't see people sometimes for weeks and weeks on end, and just simplifying everything down to an existence that is almost intolerably about self-reflection. It's not fun, I have to say. But it is rewarding. But through that process, I am literally recapturing what not only did what was given in the dream, but the actual experience, because it's in every DNA, it's in every, someone said in the memory, every DNA in your body has been to that well consciously and remembering and experienced it. And I can tell you right now, you do not know how much fear you are in until it's all taken away. And if I took a mirror right now and I took it around all your faces, you would see a huge amount of fear and anxiety. Because we are living a very unnatural model of existence. For a start, we've got the cost of living. How is that? The cost of living is all encompassing. There's no time to live. This is all about making the cost that it is. It's all insane. It's completely insane. The whole reality is so insane. And these activation, integration ceremonies that we're about to embark on are going to bring that insanity very, very clear to you. If it isn't already, and even if it is already, you're going to experience it in a very different, in a different way. I almost let it slip there, I almost said it in a very difficult way. Lock the door. It's worth it just to wake up, because when you wake up, you understand why you're here, you understand it's all bullshit, and you understand that you do not have to do this. You are so much more than this. You are the masterpiece of human design.
There we go, Julia Carter introducing the sixth ceremony at a workshop in Glastonbury. Again, I'll apologise for the quality of the recording. I'll try and learn how to manage them a little bit better. I think there probably are ways of doing that. I see we've still got 43 people in the chat box, which is some kind of record at this time of night. Thanks very much to all of you for sticking with us. See, there was a question from Graham in the chat box asking me whether I feel that numbers are increasing or staying pretty steady. I'd say that over the years, the numbers have definitely increased. When we first did a ceremony for the first time in Glastonbury, we used to have the assembly rooms for a day to do that. We now have to have the assembly rooms for 2 days to accommodate all of the people who are coming to do the ceremonies for the first time. Also, we're seeing larger numbers of people, I think, turning up to join in with ceremonies that have already been celebrated in Glastonbury. So my impression is that the numbers are increasing. There are very few of us ambassadors about, unfortunately. There's a lot of work being done by very few people. It is something that we're trying to address. I would say that as each new batch of people gets connected, though, we are endeavouring to impact the morphogenetic field, the field which holds the, according to Rupert Sheldrake and to a certain extent Carl Jung as well, that holds, is accessible to all of humanity and holds the whole of humanity's experience. As such, each time we connect somebody, the field gets more capable of housing further connection, and also it creates a bit of an impact even on the people that aren't coming along. So I think the numbers are increasing. I think there is, as always, there is a huge amount of cost involved in doing what Juliet and Jiva do. They do everything to a really high standard, and so there have been cost implications for people. I think that it's probably by and large for various reasons becoming easier and cheaper to do it. One reason is, of course, that you can actually come across the ceremony of original innocence is now on the internet and can be done in the comfort of your own home. I haven't got the link to hand because, as you probably spotted at the beginning of the show, I'm not quite so together as I normally am. However, if you go to my new template website, which I'm in the process of writing, which can be found at template.dr-rock.biz, you'll find on the very front page there a link to that. It can also be found with a little more difficulty on the template's own website, which is templateorg.com. Like I say, I haven't got those to hand at the moment, and my hands are still quivering a bit, so I'm not managing the mouse too well. So, means that Ceremony 1 can now be done by anybody for free, and I'm aware that people who are doing that are then going around and showing it to other people. So there are now quite a lot of people doing Ceremony 1 that we at the template know absolutely nothing about at all. They're just out there doing it by themselves. Ceremony 2 will also shortly be available on the internet and on DVD. Well, not DVD, we're going to put it on a pen drive this time, so that'll be available eventually on the internet, shortly on a pen drive, which means Ceremonies 1 and 2 will be available to be done for free. I know that Juliet and Jeeva would seriously like to get the codes out now pretty damn quickly, but that is possibly more expensive than us going out as ambassadors. Synchro and I intend to make it a whole lot more available in Wales and the north of England. Anybody that's interested in finding out a little bit more about that, do feel free to Skype me on dr.rock2012, because I like to deal with these things slightly more privately if possible. And we're more than happy to consider that. We will be doing a lot of ceremonies next year, because we realise that critical mass is the name of the game, and we really want to get it out there. I noticed that a character called It's Flat FFS was commenting on the fact that Juliet seems to believe that the world's a sphere when it is in fact flat. I'm not actually going to get into that. I'm just going to say that the components of the ceremonies, which we're not talking about here, at some point I might. I'd love to show you some photographs of the geometry that we use, but anybody who's got any grip on geometry at all will know that the chances of the Earth being flat are pretty bloody slim. There's a lot of really good reasons for that. And like I say, I'm just not going to go into it. I just thought I would comment on it, because if you want to find people who actually understand geometry, then Jeeva is the man to talk to. And I think you get very short shrift from him on that kind of argument. So I know there's a bit of a debate on that. The first five ceremonies, rather strangely, connect 33 circuits into the actual human body. They're kind of circuits that run from us, and they actually run locally into the solar system. So in Ceremony 5, as demonstrated by muscle testing, we reconnect circuits into the inner planets of the solar system, the planets that were recognized classically, although it does appear that the Sumerians seem to know about the further planets as well, but they're not involved in this for whatever reason. So we reconnect 33 circuits. Ceremony 6, the one we're talking about here, reconnects the first sphere kit, like a circuit, but it's a sphere. Those of you who know Leonardo's Vitruvian Man, the guy that's standing there with his arms outstretched and 1 foot forward and 1 foot at 90 degrees to the body, but that demarcates a circuit that runs right the way round all of the others and interpenetrates them all. And that completes basically the reconnection of these circuits. After that, we start reaching further out. We reach a little bit beyond the body and then a little bit beyond that, until come Ceremony 10, we're actually reconnecting a circuit that runs straight through the heart of the sun. Did have it in mind to play set the controls for the heart of the sun tonight, but I forgot about that. Never mind. And of course the sun is what it's all about, because fundamentally the sun is projecting, is receiving, decoding, utilizing and projecting light to us. This is interesting because it actually ties in with the, Mayan idea. When they abandoned their interest, they were great astronomers, they were fabulous mathematicians. And for a long, long while, they concentrated their attentions on the north, on the polar star, until they realized that it was going to disappear and that it wasn't reliable, and developed a lot of myths about what was happening to that. And for some unaccountable reason, they turned their attention to the dark heart of our galaxy, to the black bulge in the centre of the Milky Way, which is especially visible from dark mountain tops. They became very interested in that. And their idea then became that the sun was pulsing light to the human entity from the mind of light beyond the sun, and the mind of light beyond the sun was housed in the heart of the galaxy. Physicists seem still to believe that the heart of the galaxy is a black hole. Again, by talking about it, I don't necessarily recognise its validity. I think it has now been demonstrated that the heart of the galaxy doesn't just swallow light and everything, that there is energy coming out of it. So they seem to have been party to information that is not apparent to all modern physicists. So the idea there is that the heart of the galaxy is like a galactic pineal, that the sun is like the pineal of our solar system, and that all of this light is being projected directly into our pineal, which is made up largely, though not entirely, of retinal cells, and so it is actually designed to receive and distribute light through the whole system, pretty much as the sun does to the solar system, and the dark heart of the galaxy does to the galaxy. So that is holographic as well. And whilst we're on the subject of holography, Carl Pribram, who's one of the recognised masters on the way the brain works, although this is still pretty much a difficult area of discourse, Carl Pribram believes that our brains are receiving and interpreting frequencies from a holographic domain. So to a certain extent, modern science is definitely catching up with all of this stuff, and of course it is from this that we've been able to describe what the template is. The dream that Juliet had, in which she woke up going, oh, of course, it's all so simple, I understand it all completely, and then just forgot it all. That's an experience I've had, not only from dreams, but also from certain other experiments. Now, the point there is that we take on thousands of millions of stimuli more or less every moment of every day, and one of the jobs of our brain appears to be to filter a lot of this stuff out so that the mind only catches some of it. Nonetheless, it seems to be recognised that we don't actually forget anything that happens to us. So although we're not able to bring this consciously to mind, it is still within our system somehow. It is still accessible to those bits of us that are not maybe unconscious, subconscious, I think unconscious maybe. And so that, if you like, is an interesting way of looking at how all of this actually occurred in the first place. The two main experiences were the meeting with those reptilian humanoids on Green Mountain, something that, strangely enough, out of all this stuff, I had no difficulty in believing when I was first told it. One thing it did do to me is made sure that my old-styly willingness and to meet some aliens kind of receded a little bit, and I thought, actually, you know, I think I can probably give that a miss. So that was one thing. It led to, as far as Juliet and Jiva understand, a full experience of what the human entity is capable of when all of its DNA is properly installed and properly firing. And that their job, if you like, was to, as she put it, reverse engineer that experience all the way back to the beginning so that they could, so that they could lay it out and present it to other people and share it. It seems possible, at least, that the understanding necessary to be able to pull that off was actually put across in a dream. And it wouldn't be the first time. We know that a lot of discoveries in modern science came about as a result of dreams and visions in the minds of young scientists who were then able to bring it into the waking world, examine it, and demonstrate it to be true. So all of this is not completely unfeasible. In fact, it's a long, long way from it. She spoke a bit about how that particular experience was something like a shamanic initiation, or kundalini was the word she used. And I've heard about kundalini energy rushing up people's legs from the earth. rushing up the spinal column and all the rest of it. I've actually seen it happening to people as well. I've seen people just collapse under trees as these moments occur to them. And I've often wondered what it was like. Curious, as a kind of coincidence, sorry, kicking my mic stand there, as a bit of a coincidence, I was looking at a book over the weekend called You Are the Placebo, a book which I would really like to read. And it had in the middle of it a load of pictures of MRI scans of the brain showing different activity when different sorts of meditation were undertaken. It showed that the brain changes when meditation occurs, that this can actually affect bits of the brain that are being affected by Parkinson's and all manner of things. One of the things it showed most specifically was what a brain plot looks like when somebody is experiencing a Kundalini moment, and the whole thing goes completely bananas. Every single normal wave in the brain increases its amplitude by, in some cases, several times, and the whole chart becomes a major mass of squiggles. So one way or the other, MRI scans as well are showing that the actual physical matter of the brain can be used to demonstrate expressions of these sort of experiences. I've talked also before about Hamish Miller, who's a famous dowser, now dead, alas, and some brain plots were done of him when he slipped into his dowsing mode, which showed similar thing. They basically showed that completely different parts of his brain were lighting up when he was dowsing from when he wasn't. All of this suggests that that we do have different ways of accessing the brain that we have within our bodies. And as Juliet says, of the 3,000 million base pair chemicals in our DNA, only some 60 million are active, which is around 2%. Modern science, of course, would have us believe that all of that is junk. The other 90%, 98% we don't need. The template suggests that actually that 98% is simply waiting to be reactivated by a proper flow of light through the system via the eyes and the pineal and the pituitary hypothalamus pineal complex, which, if I can actually master the sound of these recordings, we'll be hearing more about, hopefully, from some of the later workshops from the weekend. The idea that this is self-cognition, we've been kind of switched off from ourselves, as it were. It must have been very interesting for Juliet and Jiva to find themselves conscious in a transcendent reality as a result of organic changes in the way the brain was functioning in that moment. He said that there was no shadow, no fear, no separation, but at the same time there was still an autonomous, sentient sovereignty, inconceivably simultaneously one and different. And the visuals that she was describing there in the book, she describes that they found themselves in a world where the blades of grass were kind of glowing from within, and so they cast no shadow. This all sounds just a little bit trippy, and I think that's pretty much exactly what it was. It's just that this time, instead of having to take substances to bring this about, it came about organically as a result of a change in the chemical balance of the brain. And once again, we do know that we are capable of producing inside ourselves many of the things that people choose to pay money for to bring these states about. Serena Roney-Dougal and others have written about the fact that the pineal, as a result of the melatonin-serotonin cycle, actually produces onboard DMT as we're riding the surfboard of dreams into sleep. And as far as I can gather, we are actually capable of producing all of the substances that are being synthesized and fed to us actually inside our own bodies. And I'm sure many people realize that what we call hallucinations are not simply imaginary kind of like mistakes, that they are actually tuning in. We are tuning in when this happens to us to different levels of reality in pretty much the same way as a radio picks up different channels as we tune it backwards and forwards. So the basic scope is that we are currently being limited by our lack of ability properly to absorb and transduce light energy, the creation code that is being beamed to us from the sun, and that this is not a completely unchangeable situation. I can imagine as well that having had such an experience, you would be pretty much haunted by it every day. Not only the meeting with the reptilian humanoids, who were exuding fear, making it very, very difficult to avoid going with them. And this is, I think, why it is that the ceremonies start to address fear so early on, is because it is a strong and potent means of control. And to be able to resist that is really, really important. And it's important on this kind of fractal level that we're talking about in terms of the template and ceremonies, but it's also important down here on the ground for the way we deal with people. You can hear that she, and we've experienced this again and again, that she is, as she put it, gobsmacked by the fact that they have been able to pull this off. And it all does seem pretty unlikely. But once you've experienced this for years and years and watched the growth of the geometry, watched the growth of the circuits and how it is they relate to each other, it has a kind of credibility which I find absolutely stunning. It's one of the things that has kept me thoroughly involved with this project, with a gap in between, is the fact that it has remained incredibly consistent with itself. We've seen and heard in workshops the puzzlement of Jules and Jiva over some of the things that they're saying. But it is now coming across with an incredible clarity. There has been a very big difference between that clarity in the years before and this particular outing. I suspect that is why I find myself here talking about something that is actually really quite difficult to put across if you haven't personally experienced it. And personal experience is what I would thoroughly recommend if it becomes at all possible. It is helpful to realise that we don't really know how much fear we're in until it's removed, and that we are living a completely unnatural existence. Once again, whether we've experienced and recognised the ceremonies or not, whether we've experienced and recognised an alien presence on Earth or not, it is quite clear that we are living an unnatural existence. The kind of stuff that we are experiencing, hearing about, and even seeing happening now to our neighbours here and abroad, that things are not right. As Juliet says, what the hell is the cost of living? What is that? It's all expressed in imaginary tokens, in requiring us to do all sorts of work, which are the things that we would not necessarily be choosing to do. I would personally love to see what would happen if humanity was free to exercise its own genius. I suspect that we would not naturally be going out there and fighting each other and killing and slaughtering each other. There is no time to live at the moment. Well, actually, for some of us there is. But mostly it's a struggle to keep up with imaginary demands that are being put upon us, demands which I'm sure we would all like to see removed. And that is what I hope we are working towards here. Because as Juliet said, and as we recognise, this whole reality is completely insane. It is completely insane. It's very difficult to see anything in it that is actually explicable or excusable at this point in time. Apart, of course, from our human relationships on the ground, from meeting people and talking to them, from realizing that we are all simultaneously one and different, and that every person that we meet, every individual that we meet, has something to teach us. I've recognized it for a long time with gardeners. When we meet, nobody is trying to keep anything a secret. We like to share information. Same thing's true on PIR. We are trying to make things available to people that will help them. And I think that is our natural state. I think it is the manipulation of our consciousnesses, psychosocially, chemically, all of that, that is making a huge amount of difference to our natural state. And I am more than willing to accept that this whole thing is kind of underwritten in some kind of mutation of our genes, which is preventing a proper expression of ourselves. But as we've been trying to make clear this evening, now is the time for change. That is why so much change is being seen on PIR. It is why the judicial system and the governments and all the other corporations that are inflicting so much harm upon us are finding life getting more and more difficult for them. That, of course, is also a question of knowledge. It's a question of looking at it and acting on the knowledge that we get. And it's a question of numbers. The more of us there are that are doing it, the more effective it's going to be and the more difficult it's going to be to sort it out. We are heading for a different world. It is difficult. Nobody says any of this is going to be easy. I think it's especially difficult for people like Juliet and Jeeva who are bringing this kind of stuff through, and for people who are trying new techniques for the first time on the ground. But it's worth it just to wake up. We need to understand why we're here. We are beginning to understand that it is all bullshit, and that just because what is being done has been done for a very, very long time doesn't mean to say that we have to keep on doing it. We at PIR know that as well as anybody else. And hopefully it's easier to think about these other more subtle and large scale kind of changes that we might be making. So we've come basically to the end of another show. Obviously already it's kind of 10-2. I've got about 12 minutes of music to play, so I'll be a bit late out again, Tony. I'll keep getting fined if I'm not careful for this. Next week, we're going to have Steve Jones returning to the show. He came on with several of his friends some while back they were talking about bee guardianship and permaculture and the like. And Steve will be coming to talk to me about permaculture, cooperative living, of which he has a lot of experience. It's one of the things that is a major challenge, as far as I can see, is that people have somehow forgotten how to live together. And hopefully that will prove to be an interesting chat. So in the meantime, it's about the end of the show. I've still got 42 people in the chat box. I'm really, really grateful to you all for being there, and to PIR for giving me the opportunity still to be here as well, even though I do sometimes seem to talk about stuff which is a little bit off beam. Believe me, it's a great stunt. I'm going to play Brothers in Arms and a little bit of Slade on the way out, and Tony will be on playing some tunes afterwards, I trust. Thanks a lot, as I say, to all of you for being there, and I'll see you next week. Here's some Dire Straits.